The final piece of tape tonight is Eric Mottram again, but this time in interview. Because of the time, I am going to trust, and I do believe that it is self-explanatory, Eric speaking on various episodes in his life. And then to finish, I'm going to ask now, so that I don't come back, Jeff Nuttall to finish the evening. So Eric Mottram and then Jeff.
We went out to the Blue Mountains by moonlight and parked the car up in, right up in the mountain. I was thinking, oh God, it's a gorgeous view of all these mountains in this moonlight. This is beautiful. And I went out to the edge of this ridge, and there was a refuge thing, you know, put your bits in. And there was this weird old guy standing there, shuffling around in the waste paper bin and so on. And I sort of turned to him and say, like, you know, it was just kind of, and he's all huddled up, and it all got quite clouded over. And I think this guy, well, I think it's going to rain or something. And Porter Williams said, like, Eric! I said, what's the matter? He said, I turned around, and he said, like, I thought, you know, being very slowly, so I walked away. I'm standing next to a bear. Was shuffling around in this rubbish thing.
Yes,
looking.
Yes.
He nearly, poor lad, nearly had a fit. He said, do you realize what that was you were standing next to? I said, what's that poor old guy? He said, it was a bear. And I turned around, and this bloody thing just sort of kept me on all fucking standing on his hind legs. To know. See, the course at Cambridge is interesting. It's called the tri-pass was called English Literature Life and Thought. It is not, it's a cultural studies course, which is where I learned a lot of what I do now, which is basically cultural studies. And that sense of, the first lecture I went to, I thought, my God, what have I got myself into? It was on the English monastic system in the Middle Ages, by a man called H.S.R. Bennett, who was at Emmanuel College. And I thought, oh my God, you know, what have I got myself into? Halfway through, I realized what I got myself into. This was very interesting and indeed. And I had no idea at all that that would be an interesting subject. And that really shook me. Odd, isn't it? The lecture on the medieval monastic system would open up. It wasn't so much what the thing was about. Yes, it was, in a sense, but it was a sense of that was interesting. And in the hands of a scholar, it was vital to do with the transmission of intellectual ideas and ideas in a bad time. I guess that affected me a lot. And I think also, of course, you know, after the war, it was terrible. It was this awful sense of everything was a chaos anyway. And I said you had something to do, which was, without being exaggeratory about it, that it was of value and was not denigratory and was not destructive and was dealing with creative actions.
It's constructive.
But it was, and also we were dealing with artists, we were dealing with poetry and fiction and history of ideas. We had a course called Tragedy from Aristotle to D.H. Lawrence, you know. We had a course called The Moralists. We started with the Greeks and ended up, I forget who, someone contemporary. You see, there was that sense of a huge range of subjects. It wasn't narrow at all.
Right.
And it really gave us all this, well, those of us who could respond to it, this enormous boost that there was a history of value,
okay,
which we could have access to.
The social function you mentioned earlier is to do with enlarging people's views of things and just making things seem more complicated.
And sharing it, because I mean, my sense is that there's nothing more exciting than something you don't know about. One of the most exciting things is that I'm engaged in so many different things that I forget. And I was giving a class yesterday to the Institute of United States Studies on my technology and culture. I came across some notes about something that I hadn't looked at for some time. Somehow they slipped down a crack when I was revising thing. I don't mean revising it, but looking at it to see how to handle the class and preparing on the notes. And it was astonishing. It was very exciting. I thought, my God, that's much more interesting than I thought.
And it all tied up with what you were talking about.
And it tied up with what I was talking about. And, which is marvellous, because, you know, in the nature of things, if you're doing such a varied amount of work in so many different fields, which I love doing, the idea that it's all, like, in the forefront of your mind is nonsense. Mm-hmm. If I don't have that complete a memory, it's a good one, but it's not that complete. I think it would be incredible if it was off. I mean, my God, I get worrying.
we'll be able to get up in the
car. Say, like, you feel so loaded, like it's like a weird monster. And I said, one thing I want to do is to listen to a lot of Chicago blues. And they said, why? I was just going to the elevator. This black guy comes up and says, I hear, you know, talking about Muddy Waters and wanting to hear the Chicago blues. He said, you know, like, how do you know about this? And I said, well, I'm just interested. And he said, would you be interested? And I said, well, I want to hear some other jazz and stuff. And he said, well, I said, what can you do? I thought, well, that's that. Forget it. Next thing I knew, there was a phone call and saying, you know, could you possibly come down here tomorrow night? And he actually took me to an incredible black joint right down by the university, called Smitty's Corner, run by a large black lady called Smitty. And there was Muddy Waters on the stand. And this guy, this black guy, who turned out to be a jazz critic and stuff, as well as an employee of the World Education Service. And he was singing, Muddy Waters was singing, one of the most obscene things I've ever heard in my life, which was never recorded. Remember that marvelous, Shell advertisement? Like, put a tiger in your tank. Mm-hmm. He used that as a refrain for a series of some of the most obscene blues songs I've ever had in my life. And it was Saturday night, and this place was packed with black people. This was the time when it was like we could do it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have done it, I'm nervous. But this guy, Brooks, took me there. And he said, you know, would you like to meet Muddy? And I said, no, wait a minute. He said, well, I don't know. He said, and he went up to him and he said, like, no, someone wants to meet you here from London. He came down to stage. And I was introduced. And he said, like, well, who are these, you know, who's in his life? As luck would have it, I said to him, like, well, at the moment I'm listening for the first time to Leroy
Carr.
He said, well, I hear Leroy. He said, what do you like? And I said, well, the one I listen to at the moment, I love it, called Midnight Blues. I'll sing it for you. And he went up to the platform and he said, like, silence. He said, this is for the professor from London. and he sang beautifully. And then all these black guys applauded, and then they came around thumping on the back and putting beers on the table. That must have been one of the last times that would happen. Because, you know, after that, it was getting kind of 60s.
Yes.
That was a hell of an experience. I can't imagine that. I mean, it was beautiful. I felt so good.
We have a title for the book of interviews. It's called Meeting Muddy Waters.